Welcome to the Diversity Remix, only provocative conversations at the intersection of business, politics, and culture. I'm Charlie Echeverry.
And I'm Jesus Chavez.
This week's episode, One Bad Apple. In today's deep dive, the largest company in the world just unveiled a number of new features it says are designed to protect against the horrors of child sexual abuse. But are these new product updates a step toward a safer future for kids? Or are they a chilling example of the depth of a tech surveillance state? And in Courage or Cringe, Mexico sues gun makers, birth certificates get an overhaul, and Latinx strikes again. Has Mexico just launched an innovative lawsuit against gun manufacturers to get to the root cause of gun violence in their country? Or are they shifting the blame to the U.S. for their own failures in handling drug trafficking and crime? Is a physician association letting their wokeness show with a novel infant gender medical policy? Or is updated medical guidance reflecting the full spectrum of gender identity simply a necessity now? And finally, was a reporter rightfully called out for the use of a particular term to describe the Latino community? Or are right-wingers weighing in to score political points in yet another culture war topic? This and more this week on TDR. What do you think has been your greatest learning in a year of almost a year of doing this?
On the podcast, the greatest learning. I don't know. I mean, it's definitely the amount of work required to do a good, say, be prepared to have a good conversation. It's actually a lot. Mm-hmm. I had someone ask me the other day. I think it was actually my brother was asking me, like, so how long does it take you to record? And I was like, oh, well, typically, you know, the time you hear is pretty close to the record time because we don't tend to edit a lot of things. I was like, no. He's like, I mean, like, for the time you walk in and, you know, you get everything ready and you record, like, well, rarely does it happen that way, that we're walking in.
Yeah, it's in stages.
It's in stages because it requires having to, like, put together the, you know, the conversation and the material, the background, all of that, do the research. So, the amount of work that is required, I think, is pretty it's a lot more than maybe even I thought initially.
But has this been – what about creatively? Has it been a good outlet?
I think creatively, yeah. I enjoy having these type of conversations. I've definitely found it one of the benefits I think that it's had is when I look at my own media consumption patterns, I have a pretty broad scope of things that I look at, mm-hmm. both from publications, points of view, et cetera. I do think it's expanded my view of how I think about issues
because in the preparation, you have to kind of think about it and discern?
Both. I think both in the preparation and the conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, getting to hear – like I get excited when I hear a point of view that I hadn't thought about. Mm. I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
Sure.
Like that actually gets me – it doesn't bother me. It actually gets me excited when that happens. So I think from that perspective, it's been pretty informative doing this. Mm-hmm. So, look, if part of the goal was, you know, to some extent, can we bust the echo chamber, at least on a personal level, I feel like it has to a large degree for me.
There you go. Well, that's good. Yeah. I know we're going to be reflecting on this next week when we have our formal 100-year.
Hopefully
not. It's not even 100 episode. It's 1 year, 53 episode celebration, although we're going to be having that show with our good friend Marcos Klein. So we probably won't get a chance to reflect earnestly around what this has meant over the last year. But I agree with you. I think that the amount of work has given me a lot of appreciation for what goes into making a podcast, especially mm-hmm. Podcasts that maybe more complicated, right? Require more research even than ours, be more nuanced. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely been a learning, but I've also, I've really enjoyed doing it and I also have learned a lot in the process, but I think would add to it for me is the playing to something that I've always thought of as a strength, like the ability to communicate and like having that be an outlet for me creatively. Whereas like, you know, in our business lives, we haven't had necessarily that opportunity. So for me, it's been an awesome, awesome journey. Hope we get lots more and we'll be, you know, talking more about this, in the next episode when we actually celebrate the 1 year anniversary, but I thought I'd ask.
Yeah. Good question.
That was my way for starting the episode.
Yeah.
You see how I did that?
I saw how you did that.
Yeah. I've been doing that for the last like dozen or so episodes, just trying to catch you off guard.
Throw me off initially, but no idea now I've caught on to your
have you?
Your tricky ways.
Okay.
Try to throw me off.
The episode name for this one was very easy for me to come up with. You haven't even heard it yet. No. Although for people hearing it, they will have heard it, even though you haven't heard it in kind of non-linear time. One bad apple.
Oh, one bad apple.
You know that expression, one bad apple ruins the bunch?
Ruins the bunch.
But
is it ruins the barrel or ruins the bunch?
Ruins the bunch, yeah. Although a barrel of apples, I guess you could say too.
Yeah.
But of course, it's a question. One bad apple?
Right.
So it's question not, mark? We're not making a claim. We're asking a
question.
Are we
talking about police brutality here? What are we talking about?
I don't know. In some cases,
I love how everyone uses one bad apple as it's actually that's one of the, you know, that has to be one of the sayings that most people get entirely wrong.
Because about what it means?
About what it means and how they use it, right? Because people constantly use the, and I just think about it in the context of police brutality. It comes up all the time. Like, oh, that's just a bad apple. Mm-hmm. But they forget the second part of that very popular saying, which is it ruins the bunch
ruins
the barrel, right? Like it basically ruins the entire thing.
I don't think it's also exclusive to just apples. I think it works for like all fruit.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
But my point is like the analogy, people get it entirely wrong. There's probably very few that are, what would be another one? Can you think of another one, another analogy that people use all the time that is entirely wrong?
Divide and conquer.
Okay.
Divide and conquer is used in a colloquial sense as like we'll take the work and divvy it up. That's not what it means.
No.
It's a military term that means when we divide the enemy, we'll win. When we divide them up.
But I think that actually that still works. You conquer the bigger task or the bigger project by dividing and conquering.
I guess, but it's not looked at in the lens of it's an enemy.
Right.
It's something where like it might even be a good thing.
Right.
You know, we're going to cook dinner. Let's divide and conquer. I'll do the appetizer. You do the. But this was definitely, and it was like we have this antagonist voice. We want to defeat.
The
way to defeat them is to actually make them not aligned with one another.
Right.
That's what it means.
Yeah. That part you're right. The other one that I think of that people would get wrong all the time is I could care less, as opposed to I couldn't care less.
I could care less.
Right. People say I could care less, but what they really mean is I could not care less or I couldn't care less.
Right.
I care not much more I could actually care for.
Yeah, because if you do care less, if there's a chance you could care less, that means it actually could get less important than it is right now.
For it. Yeah, so we'll get that one wrong.
We're pretty good at having a lot of these terms that most of the time we don't know where they come from.
Yeah.
And then in many cases, we use them incorrectly.
Double whammy.
We're definitely good at that. but anyway, that was my take at a title. Since we're talking about the apple, the Big Apple. Not the Big Apple, but the other Big Apple.
The bigger apple, I would say.
You ever heard that conspiracy about the Apple logo?
No.
And how, well, you know what it is.
It's an apple that was bitten, representing
that
the
was
apple
bitten
that,
into.
Was, that was bitten by Eve, I guess.
Right. Well, that's a thought. But like if you actually hear the designer of the logo talk about, he did it to give it scale. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Because otherwise, like since it's not super clear that it might be an actual fruit, if you have the bite mark, then you know how big it is.
Oh, interesting.
So he said he did that to give it scale. But a lot of people are like, no, this is fruit from the poison tree. And look, in some cases...
I never thought about it.
In some cases, I don't know. Like I look at what they're doing now and they certainly are inviting controversy.
I don't know why I always thought it was more associated with... I guess there's no reason why that would be the case with Newton, right? With...
but he didn't eat it.
I don't know why I thought that was my... The thing that I was associated with.
It's super, what's the name? What's that called? When something, archetype. It's archetypal, right? Because it's got these religious connotations.
Sure.
It had, well, mostly because of the religious connotations, even though just so you know, trivia, the apple is never mentioned in the Bible. Just fruit. And,
You know,
scripture scholars believe that it actually might be a pomegranate. It would be more than likely what the fruit actually was.
So where did the apple come from?
Probably from Newton. Who knows? I don't know. So it just fell, and we're like, "Hey, apple, it's pretty good." You know,
yeah.
Or Cinderella.
Well, people say the
not
apple
Cinderella.
From the poison
Snow
tree.
White. Snow White.
But it has to be way older than that. No,
it's older. Yeah, but yeah.
Oh,
but
that is funny. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's not an apple.
Yeah.
At least I mean, it could be. I guess an apple. Although I don't even know if apples are. Do they grow out there? I have no idea. Pomegranates and olives I saw when I was there. Not apples.
But. I don't think that's going to matter much when they're talking about the Garden of Eden, right?
Right.
In terms of what will grow there or not.
But we're talking about a very particular kind of apple.
So, yeah, let's get into it. So Apple has some controversial new child protection measures that were announced a few weeks ago that has caused quite a bit of controversy, right? So they basically announced three changes that are going to be rolling out later this year, all related to curbing child sexual abuse, right? Or protecting kids in general. Now, the first was...
Do we know what spurred this on?
I don't know.
Yeah,
that's actually a very good question. I don't know. I don't know what started it.
The first time I saw a clip about this was last week or whatever with Bill Maher, I think, was... I didn't see the show, but I saw a YouTube clip of him basically, you know, decrying it, like complaining about it.
Oh, I think I may have seen it, yeah.
That's when it first hit my radar.
Yeah.
I didn't know it had even happened, but like what actually spurred it on. I mean, on some level, these issues, I'm sure there's advocacy groups that are constantly after them for these kind of things.
Yeah. And there's already quite a bit of laws that are out there that make it illegal, right, to own a certain type of content. So, look, the first change basically affected Apple's search app and Siri. So if a user searches for topics related to child sexual abuse, Apple will direct them to resources for reporting it or getting help with an attraction to it.
Can you imagine just the amount of, like, requests that Siri gets that are just...
Well, yeah. I mean, if you were to actually look at what it's actually searching for.
Somebody probably is, right?
I mean, I'm sure. At least for search, yeah, sure.
When I walked into the very first time I ever walked into the headquarters of Google.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever been there in wherever it is, up in Mountain View.
I have, I have.
Mountain View?
Yes, Mountain View.
I think it's Mountain View, right? But when you walk in there in the lobby, they actually, at least at the time, had a huge screen that was cataloging the searches as they were coming in. Like, literally, it was like, you know, and it would sort of light up a map behind it.
Right.
It was really crazy. But I stared at it a good long time and realized it must be on a delay and edited because there's no way that there wasn't a bunch of inappropriate stuff being searched.
Yeah, when I went, I got a chance to visit their Moonshot – I think it's called the Moonshot Factory, where they basically invest in all different projects that are really aimed for the future. So they were talking about a bunch of different things. One is how they were looking to try to solve for – internet access across the globe.
Right.
Meaning that there's a lot of areas that actually still don't have access now. Using like weather balloons, kind of that they can basically direct across different parts of the country and sort of collectively create like a network of actual coverage. It's probably one of the first times, it was a long time ago, where I saw a self-driving car.
Oh, wow.
I don't think I even heard of Tesla. I don't remember. Maybe it was already around, but it was actually pretty early on, I'm sure. So anyways.
Yeah, this would have been for me like 2008 or 2009 maybe when I was there for the first time.
Yeah, so the first change was pretty, you know, no real complaints about it, right? If someone's searching for topics related to child sexual abuse, then it's going to either report on resources or point them to places to get help with that type of attraction.
Okay, but this is a real side note, but I have to ask, if you're the guy who's programming this algorithm – to catch these terms as they're being spoken into Siri or searched, you have to like write these combinations, right?
Well, have it. You don't have to write it.
You just pull it up.
You just pull it up. Just do a query. Give me anything that has to do with. I mean, you're writing it, but you're also.
But just even thinking about that, it's got to be like
there's
just
millions of data points.
Warfare to have to be exposed to all these things.
Yeah, there's
like
millions
that.
Of data points. Yeah, there's just so much data that comes in, right, that they'll be able to pull from that. Now, the second one is a little bit more controversial, right, which is a parental control option to messages, which basically obscures sexually explicit pictures for users that are under 18 and sending parents an alert if a child 12 or under views or sends these pictures.
Okay, so basically if I'm under 18, it's blurred out on my phone, and if I'm under 12, it tells my mom and dad.
Correct.
Or my mom or dad.
So, and this is all, but these all require parent opt-in, right? So, parents must opt in for those devices, right? So, if someone's under 18, it will scan incoming and outgoing pictures with an image classifier trained on pornography looking for sexually explicit content. Now, if the classifier detects this content, it obscures the picture in question and asks the user whether they really want to view this or send it. And basically, if they said yes, then in the case of you're under 12, it notifies. It won't let you. Then it notifies your parent.
And if you're over 12, you can send it. You just have to be super sure.
Well, it basically, I don't know between 12 and 18, if it also notifies your parent. It definitely wasn't.
Well, that part doesn't seem like it does, but it does seem like it lets you send it just as long as you confirm that you want to.
Correct.
So you can be 13 and send the naked picture. You just have to be really sure you want to send it.
That part, it was not clear from reading it.
Do you think this is controversial? I don't find it very controversial. Tell me why.
Super.
Why?
I think all of it. Well, let's wait till we get to the end because I think all of it to me is controversial.
Okay.
Not all of it. I mean, the first part I get. Mm-hmm. Now, the last piece which is the most controversial, is a feature that scans iCloud photo images to find child sexual abuse material, right? Or what's called CSAM, right? Which is the acronym for child sexual abuse material, mm-hmm. and reports it to Apple moderators who can pass it to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, or which is called NCMEC, right? So Apple says it's designed this feature specifically to protect user privacy while finding illegal content. Now, the iCloud photo scanning system is focused on finding child sexual abuse images which are illegal to possess.
Correct. Right?
And if it detects enough matches, it will alert Apple's moderators and reveal the details and matches. Now, if moderator confirms the presence, right, then they disable the account and report the images to legal authorities, right? Now, by design, one thing else to note on this is that this feature only applies to photos that the user chooses to upload to iCloud. So the system does not go into does not work for users who have iCloud photos disabled. Mm-hmm. And it does not work on your private iPhone photo library on the device.
Right? Okay.
So, listen, that's basically the idea. So there is, you know, people that are, of course, as expected, you're going to have a lot of number of people who are obviously advocating for the safety of kids who are all for, to a more degree, right, these changes. And the pushback is mostly for any of those advocacy groups that are really are concerned with privacy, mm-hmm. right? And the fact that this is something that, especially even the case of Apple, who has sort of established itself as really valuing privacy of their users first and foremost, is that this now creates what many people are calling like a backdoor way to now start literally searching what's in your phone, because now you're searching messages that are supposed to be encrypted both ends, and also searching images. Now it's for the right cause. It's one of the things, like the right cause. Like, no one's going to disagree. Like, hey, if do I want?
I don't know. Nobody's going to disagree. There's organizations that are like promoting underage stuff.
We're not talking about those guys, right? Like, people that are saying like, hey, it's okay. For
I think people
of
goodwill generally. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. So that's a whole other group that is not even frankly worth talking about, because that's I don't think we're going to have much
impact on them.
Yeah, impact on them. No disagreement on that. You know, their cause is not right.
Right.
But it really is the issue around when you think about privacy. So there is, so to me, the controversy is there is some level of controversy when you think about private messages that are being sent. This ability of Apple to be able to go through these messages are supposed to be encrypted on both ends. And good cause, once again, I like the good cause, but it opens up the door. And I think that's what people are very concerned with. Like, is this the beginning of a certain level of basically being able to spy on users? And when you think about what's the name of the guy? I'm blanking right now. The one that ended up going to Russia. He released all those
Snowden.
Documents. Yeah, Snowden. Right. I mean, this is a lot of what he was talking about. Is that they were basically looking to people's, you know, communications and
spying on everyone, and there's nothing that they don't know. Like, we think that because we're sending something, and maybe it is encrypted, but it's encrypted somewhere that has some accessibility from somebody.
That stuff is illegal. I mean, that's why even the government can't do that without a warrant, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why Snowden was releasing that. In this case, it's something that, you know, even Apple is trying to find a way to bridge that line, to basically try to navigate that line. Okay, we're not gonna look into people's phones,
right?
But you are still gonna look at information that people have on their phones. Once again, in a very good cause. That's right. Why when we say, is it controversial? Yeah, I think it's very controversial.
Yeah, I think it's controversial, but I think the controversy varies by degrees, and I think it does tell us a lot of very interesting things about the kind of positions that we've heard out there about a number of things. So number one, the first one, I'm gonna basically make it kind of impossible, right, for you to search for anything like these terminologies.
You get flagged that you're searching, right?
It's going to say, wait a minute, is that what you're looking for? Right? I mean, that's basically the experience. So that one is because it's almost like saying, where can I find a good cocaine dealer? You could say that to Siri, and Siri would say, well, cocaine's illegal. It's a class one substance. So are you sure you want to go search for where to buy cocaine?
Well, what if you're a reporter? What if you're searching? No, I mean it's a good question, right? Mm-hmm. What if you're searching specifically for research to talk about this? So basically, really, what this is saying is that if you're someone that is digging into this subject to report on it, to do anything, you should not be using Apple products as part of what you use to get information around the subject.
Possibly. I mean, I don't understand exactly how the experience is for the user, but it says it directs them to resources for reporting that thing,
right,
or getting help with an attraction to it.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two options that are stated in the piece.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't say there's like some loophole for journalists who are trying to make an expose about it. Yeah, so that's a legit point.
But I think that one is as out of the three, probably has the least amount of controversy.
Okay. The second one seems to me that it is limiting what you can see and what you can share, but it's doing it for minors. What's the controversy there?
The controversy is that Apple now has the ability to view your private messages that are meant to be encrypted. Right now it's telling you that you control, but the second you start doing something that they've always been very good about saying that we're all about privacy. As a matter of fact, they've been big about not even basically giving access to FBI or police department or anyone on anyone's phone, regardless of what they've done.
Sure, even with terrorist situations.
Right, and they've done that. And while on one hand you could say, well, why aren't you working more with the law and doing it for the right causes, mm-hmm. I also respect and actually value their position of saying, no. We're going to live up to a value of ours, which is about privacy of our users. And the moment you start making those calls that, well, for the right reason, then we'll do it, then you're not really all about privacy for your users. It's just something else.
Right. But in this case, we're talking about a parental control and one that's opt-in.
It's about ability versus the use, right? So the ability is now you have the ability, if you're Apple, to be able to look at these kind of messages. And when you look at the history of this country in mm-hmm. terms of spying on their people and a company that's been pretty good about actually keeping data fairly private, now having the ability to – and actually they're telling you they're going to do that. They're going to look at your messages. So the question people have is like, okay, well, how do I know you're going to hold up to your end of the bargain where I get to keep my control as a parent? Like, all for that idea.
Your issue is just the capability existing, mm-hmm. right? And your starting point is this didn't exist until now. See, my starting point is this has always been. They've always had this. And now they're codifying it and packaging it and saying parents can control what they see. So I'm less shocked by the fact that they can do it.
But this one specifically, they couldn't. Even the stuff that Snowden was talking about, they were using people's numbers. They were tracking patterns of people's conversations. They actually were looking at the actual content, especially in these kind of encrypted messages, right? So that's the part what is really interesting is they actually are now looking into the content, right? Which is a different level of surveillance that wasn't available before.
But are a number of these different software that control pornography on websites and all this other stuff for parents. On some level, it has to scan what is coming in.
Yeah, that's right. So if you have something on your but it's a difference between what you're viewing in a browser, things that you're searching, things that are coming from a public site, right, or some other external site. But in this case, the very specific issue that we're talking about here is end-to-end encrypted messages. And the ability for Apple to look into the content, even with a really good reason, as a parent of a daughter, yes, I'm all for it. But it does, it gives me pause to know that Apple has this ability. And who's to say that the government can't come in and just kind of stiff arm a little bit? Hey, now I want you to apply this to other things that they're looking at.
Sure.
Other messages.
I mean, frankly, what's to say Apple on their own won't do it? I mean, I'm more concerned about Apple than I am about the government.
In a lot of cases. Although Apple's history has been pretty good about pushing back on the government, not giving them access.
I'm not saying that they agree with each other. I'm saying I'm more concerned about Apple than the government.
That's right. So, but in both of those scenarios, they're telling you that now they're going to do this. So it's a whole new level of surveillance that wasn't there before. And I think that's the concern.
I think that's the concern that both these
last two have. The second one to me was now with the parental control option. Yes, it's if you take it at face value and you 100% trust Apple's that they're going to, with great power comes great responsibility, that they're going to limit that power to only when parents allow it and only for the kind of content that parents are looking for. Okay.
Yeah, and I guess my position is they've always had the power. We're just finding out about it maybe, or it's being fed to us
but
in
it
this
wasn't,
way.
It
wasn't explicit.
It was never public that way or explicit.
Right, so but think about how this would work otherwise, Jesus. You're going to have basically a product and engineering team to go build this capability for this purpose. What you're saying is somebody sat in a room with a bunch of coders or whatever and built this capability, and now they're telling us about the fact that they built it. I think they've had it. And now they're just basically putting it to work to this end under the banner of protecting child sexual abuse.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it just goes counter to at least the position that Apple has had historically. Mm-hmm. And at least there hasn't been anything, that has been leaked to show otherwise. Could they have done it? Yeah, I guess, right? I mean, that's hard for me to sit there and say with confidence that they haven't. But there was nothing to point to that they had it before.
How do you feel about drug sniffing dogs?
I don't have any opinion about them one way or the other.
Okay. Because I kind of view this very similar to the idea of drug sniffing dogs, in the sense that the substance in question there is like a Schedule I narcotic or whatever it is. You're choosing to go out into public, in this case an airport or a train station or whatever, and you're exposing yourself to agents and dogs who are going to, if they smell something in your luggage that is illegal for you to have, mm-hmm. you're going to be stopped and you're going to have the consequences, right? Why couldn't this question, why couldn't this be the same? I'm putting my, you know, illegal to have pictures onto a server, which is iCloud basically.
Sure.
And the system, the dog, is catching it and I'm having the consequences. Why is this different in your mind?
Because I think this falls under a privacy sector, right? Because the example you just gave, which mm-hmm. is interesting example you're giving, but under that kind of context, I could be able to apply it to anything, right? Think about using other technology that could look into people's homes to see whether or not they have firearms because they're metal. And if a lot of home is wood, it'd be hard to do, but could I pull it off with some kind of like special, you know, like not extra, but you know what I mean, right? Like to be able to see through. Really, sure, you could do that.
And that would be
– right? Like yeah, but that's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do.
But wouldn't the more accurate though corollary be if they were the technology was scanning for, say, illegal guns, fully automatic ones, things like that? Because there's nothing illegal about having a gun in your home.
Right. Sure. But what we're talking about here is that I think where you're coming from is that – because of the crime or potential crime, then the means to find that crime make it okay because of what you're looking for.
That's not what I'm saying.
Well, in this case, I see it that way, right? Because I wholeheartedly disagree with anything, any kind of, you know, kid pornography or anything. Of course, I completely disagree with that. So I'm not advocating for that, of course, in any way. What I'm questioning is that there is the role of privacy as it relates.
Yeah,
so in this case, we're saying, okay, so to your point, if you're traveling through an airport, and you have luggage, and a drug sniffing dog, you know, basically walks by and catches you on that. Then that's free game. Would you have issue if police were basically roaming through the neighborhoods and having drug sniffing dogs going through everyone's house, sniffing around the house and trying to find illegal drugs? I think people would have an issue with that.
I do too. But
right?
I do too.
It is the same. It's the exact same premise, and the same that you
really.
Still have a drug sniffing dog. No. Why not?
It's different because the assumption that I'm making with the drug sniffing dog is a couple of factors. Uh-huh. One is that it's an illegal thing you're not allowed to possess. Number one. Number two is that you are putting yourself in a place publicly where you know that the conventions are changing. If I'm sitting on my couch at home, I'm not doing that.
But that's actually doesn't make zero difference, right? Having illegal substances. No, hold on, just hear me out. So that something is illegal has nothing to do whether or not you're in a public situation or in a private situation.
Yeah, no, I'm saying right, it's
so
a combination of things that makes
right,
it different
so,
for me.
So put that one to the side. The fact that you happen to be outside versus inside, it still is the same drugs are still illegal based on whatever state you're in, right? Or federal, depending on what it is, mm-hmm. right? So that one makes zero difference. Yes, you're right in the sense that when you're traveling, you're sort of exposing yourself because they're looking for a lot of things beyond just drugs that you have in situation. But you can look at that example if you fast forward that and say, well, let's just take dogs around the neighborhoods and try to catch illegal drugs because it doesn't matter. They're still illegal. They're illegal at the airport. They're illegal in your home. And my issue is more the privacy that we're willing to give up in this case to be able to catch this. And I do think, once again, the capability of a company to now look into the actual content and a company that has basically positioned itself as being all about the privacy of its consumers, that's what I have issue with.
I think everything that you just said hangs on the actual words of the Fourth Amendment and specifically the word unreasonable. Because what you just described, the reason why I think it's materially different that you're having drug-sniffing dogs just roaming neighborhoods mm-hmm. and having drug-sniffing dogs at an airport is that one would be reasonable, one would be unreasonable. That's the only difference. You know, at a place where people would go to traffic drugs, i.e. airport, dock, train station, having a dog there is to my mind, it's a reasonable search
and seizure. I think it's on the eye of the beholder.
At home, I think I don't think at all. I think, how would you define reasonable and unreasonable then? That's the reason the law is written that way, precisely to talk about these things.
But the reason why a law is always interpreted is for that reason.
For sure.
Right? Because
agreed.
What's reasonable or reasonable to somebody else? It's all based on precedent. It depends on whatever lawyer or not lawyer, whatever judge decides something is deemed
sure, and there's precedent for each one of these right. things too that says this is reasonable, this isn't.
The point I'm making here is the same mechanics work the same way. And that's why I think there is
the
an
mechanics
issue.
Might.
As it relates to the mechanics meaning of a dog smelling something.
Yeah, I
right?
get that. I
so
get that.
That's the way to do it. I think in the same way that I would also have issues that if all of a sudden anything that you mail in, which I hope it doesn't happen, maybe it does, I don't know. If I mail something on snail mail, mm-hmm. does all my letters get open to see what's in them? Right.
No.
If I'm writing message, what if I'm writing something that is around?
But they might get smelled.
Yeah.
By a dog.
That's fine. What if I'm writing a message in a letter that actually says something like that I'm planning on do something to a kid, that it's mm-hmm. sexual pornography, maybe even includes a picture in there. Like, if those letters now start to get opened mm-hmm. to look what's in them, I will have the same problem with that as is sending a message that's supposed to be encrypted, end-to-end encryption, which is they're different technology, but they're the same kind of mechanism.
But again, the reasonableness comes into apply there. The expectation that you have when you send a letter in the mail
versus an encrypted message end-to-end should be the exact same.
No, I'm talking about, number three, the idea of iClouds and uploading uh-huh. pornographic pictures of little kids up to a shared server. I think that sending a letter to your Aunt Tilly and, like, what happens in that envelope mm-hmm. is different than I upload this thing to an open server.
Well, I was making the comparison to the second one, which is I'm sending an encrypted message end-to-end, which mm-hmm. is the same thing as a letter. I'm expecting the letter to stay closed end-to-end. There should be zero expectation that whatever letter you're sending, no matter what's in it, unless to your point, there is some kind of powder on it or something else that gives someone a reason to. But that's not what these guys are saying. They're saying, we're going to look at all of your content. That's the reality. They're going to look at every single content and going to try to pull out from it what they think is going to be content that basically has illegal content in it. But the expectation of privacy on an encrypted message that goes into it and the expectation of privacy between a letter that gets sent from one person to the other should be the same, is that these are private messages that are being sent.
I think it is, but I think you have to address the fact that this is being applied to minors, right? So you're saying the expectation of a privacy of a, say it, you have to finish it, of a 10-year-old sending a letter
so
should be that.
So on a letter, okay, if a letter being sent by a 10-year-old,
yes.
then you're saying that those should be open to being open and search if a parent imagine that if it was a snail mail, if it's done that way.
If there was a different kind of coding for USPS where it was a particular kind of stamp this comes from my kid, and I'm giving authorization to whoever it is because I put a pink stamp on it or something
right.
for you to go through this.
Yeah.
Then I think you have to look at, I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm saying you have to look at that differently than if it was a 40-year-old guy or a business
sure.
envelope. That's
sure.
all I'm saying.
Yeah, no. And I think that's the reason why some people are supporting this. I think it's a massive blow to privacy for individuals, especially with encrypted messages. Even the iCloud feature, like the whole thing that we're uploading this to a public place is not. The way that even when you think of cloud, like iCloud services in this case from memory, are still meant to be private. There is no assumption that anyone has that if I'm backing up my phone, it's going to a place going to be public for anyone to view there.
Okay.
Right? Otherwise, people wouldn't put their own selfies of their own nudes and their own, like people put a lot of their own personal stuff.
For sure.
So we should take everything off.
Yeah.
So I think Apple is walking to a very sticky place by doing this, even with this, what they get really good intent. And I like what they're trying to prevent, but I still think they're walking to a place that is not a good place.
But it also sounds like your position, I find it, how do you hold your position and then simultaneously not hold the same position that these are private companies and they can do whatever they want? In other words, I think those are naturally—
I'm not arguing that they're not private companies.
No,
they can do whatever they want.
You're saying they can do whatever they want.
Of course, they're a private company.
Okay, so
we're not having a discussion of whether or not a private company could do private things.
Oh, see, because I reject that argument that they're just private companies. I think that Amazon and the other companies, which we've talked about, are in a completely different class, and the regulations and laws haven't caught up with who they are. But I don't think that they're just some private company. I think they're materially different. Apple's very different than Schmo's Pizza or whatever.
Because
the reality
is, they do this. What the end result may be is that people go start using Telegraph for messages now.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, kids want to send pictures of each other naked without Apple being able to say, they can do it right now, with Apple being able to do zero about it. This is talk about specifically for iMessages,
mm-hmm.
which are supposed to be encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
They're turning around to the same thing a lot of people are using now, which is Telegraph.
Right, but what I'm saying is, why couldn't the answer just be go get an Android phone?
Like, sure.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah. Otherwise, it'll be a 5-minute podcast conversation if the answer is just go get an Android phone. The issue is like the bigger implication of them doing this, mm-hmm. right? Of course, part of it is exactly that, and maybe that is what may happen. I think some people will walk away from doing just the same way that some people walked away from Facebook, from Twitter, from other platforms that they disagree with. They go do something else, and that's okay. And I think you're going to have a similar dynamic here. Maybe people start using WhatsApp instead. Right. And say, hey, instead of don't use iMessages anymore, use WhatsApp because that's more of a private platform. If it's not that, maybe it's Telegraph. All the other platforms that people
I just think it's interesting that question of these being private companies and being able to do whatever they want, which is what a lot of people find themselves in that camp when it comes mm-hmm. to things like censoring particular points of view, are oftentimes also arguing, look at the damage to privacy and look how much power these guys have. So it seems like it'd be hard to hold both of those positions is my point. So I'm not saying you hold it. I'm saying that people hold the idea that there's a huge impact to privacy, a huge loss of our Fourth Amendment, you know, reasonable search and seizure expectations.
Right.
And at the same time, well, this is a private company. They can do whatever they want. I just think that those are very difficult to hold at the same time. I reject the argument that they're just a private company like everybody else. So I think it comes down to the question of whether or not it's reasonable or unreasonable. And for the most part, even though I think these are controversial, I think they're more reasonable than unreasonable. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I have less of an issue with them. I'm not saying I don't have an issue with them. I'm just saying it's less than maybe you do.
I remember I'll date myself with a story. Long, long time. I was in high school. I was working at Kmart.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
And we worked at the
Kmart?
Kmart.
You mean Mamaste.
Exactly. Kmart. And it was like in the electronics department, and that's where people were bringing people. That's the time people start bringing their film to get processed, right? Mm-hmm. And when the little machine will process it, like all of the picture will come out like in this on the outside of the machine, right. And you kind of if you just like look, you can see the pictures coming out, and then you grab them and put them in an envelope, and then just like have it there for people to pick up. And I remember there was a couple times where we had pictures that were like pretty like X-rated, right? And one of the times, someone from the people that was working there was kind of like snickering a little bit. And when the lady picked it up, she picked up on the fact that they were like this guy had obviously had seen her picture.
Yeah.
And she was super pissed, right?
Sure.
And there was like this, and almost like this unbroken rule that had been, or unspoken rule that had been broken. And the fact that, listen, I know that you could look at them, but there is an expectation of privacy when I'm processing my pictures,
sure.
You're not going to look at them. And I think if I want to give an analog example to this, you know, digital example, it's probably that. Where you're right. We know that we share things on social. We share things even and I think this is very different from social because this is supposed to be your files. Because in this position now that I can use shared services, web services, and that anything that's in there can be at any point be exposed to anyone else, then that's a problem. And I shouldn't use Google Drive anymore for any of my private information. We have sensitive business information that we wouldn't be pretty uncomfortable if someone is able to just take it and just share it with somebody else because we're using a web service. Like, that's a problem. And I understand the intent here, but I think the application opens you up for once again, it's a violation of the expectation of the level of privacy you should have for these kind of services.
And for that, let me just agree with you 100% if we close this out, that I definitely think that this is a doorway into them having more surveillance power.
For sure.
More ability. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No question about that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No question about that. But to me, that's a less shocking claim because that's already my expectation.
Yeah, all right. Fair enough. Fair enough, Charlie.
Shall we move on to courage or cringe?
Courage or cringe.
I love that sound effect.
Love it. Love it.
You picked it, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
I think you did. I don't know.
Well, that was one of your three, I think. I was like, oh, that sounds good.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one.
All right. So first topic, Mexico sues U.S. gun manufacturers for contributing to arms trafficking deaths.
Sounds like there will be some lawyer's fees on that one.
There will be lawyers. Absolutely. So the Mexican government is suing the U.S. gun manufacturer and distributors mm-hmm. in U.S. federal court. Now, the Mexican government argues.
How does that work? You can be like a foreign citizen, sue a company in the other territory? That seems interesting to me.
Well, like, I guess it would have to be the federal or international court, maybe.
I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This one is definitely new territory. I didn't realize that was even an option. So the Mexican government argues that the companies know that their practices contribute to the trafficking of guns to Mexico and facilitate it. Now, the government estimates that 70% of the weapons trafficked to Mexico come from the U.S., according to the Foreign Affairs Ministry. And by the way, that number has, depending on who you look at, it's as high as 90%, according to some people, right?
Of the
weapons that are
trafficked used in crime
in Mexico, mm-hmm. yeah, are coming from the U.S., right? And that in 2019 alone, at least 17,000 homicides were linked to traffic weapons, right? Now, the Mexican government seeks at least $10 billion in compensation for these companies' contribution to the guns that are in the country. Now, Steve Shadowin, the lead attorney representing Mexico, said that in the early 2000s, about 30 U.S. cities brought similar litigation against gun manufacturers, arguing that they should be responsible for increased police hospitalization, and other costs associated with gun violence. Now, as some of those cities started winning some of those cases, gun manufacturers went to Congress and got an immunity statute for their manufacturers, right?
Which is the case now. So they can no longer be sued.
They can no longer be. So there is a law right now that no gun manufacturer can be sued for the use of their guns in any kind of
crime.
In the U.S., yeah. Right? But that's where this case is actually kind of interesting, which is Mexico argues that immunity doesn't actually apply when the injury occurs outside of the U.S., right? So, like, that's super interesting.
Now, I was talk about precedent. I mean, every other country would be like, wait, you got $10 billion?
What happened?
We're going to go get $10 billion.
What
we'll
was
get
interesting as well as I was listening to the episode of The Daily, right? And they were talking about this issue, which mm-hmm. is, and one of the things that the Mexico government was claiming is that some of the design that these gun manufacturers do to customize some of these guns is specifically meant to attract some of these cartel folks, right? An example they use is like there's some of these guns that apparently come engraved with like Emiliano Zapata, right, who was like very famous revolutionary from Mexican Revolution, with like a quote.
Really?
What?
That's news to me. But I mean, I could be wrong.
What, Emiliano Zapata?
Zapata engraving on an American gun manufacturer's gun?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay. So there's like a whole, like, you know, the same way that people like to, you know, put, what are these called, dubs on the car?
Right.
Get them all pimped out. Well, people do that with their guns as well.
Well,
and a lot
this.
Of stuff happens, you know, by the manufacturer. So they're saying that, hey, you're creating these guns that are more attractive to some of these drug traffickers on purpose, knowing that they're going to end up there, right?
Yeah.
That's at least the argument.
So coming out with the Che Guevara 44
has that.
I just looked up. Colt actually does have a Emiliano Zapata Centennial 1911 engraved 38.
There you go.
It's very, very interesting.
The sale of firearms is severely restricted. And part of their argument is that really when you think about firearms being sold in Mexico is really restricted, is very controlled, right, by the Defense Department. But there is, of course, thousands of guns that are being smuggled into Mexico by the country's powerful drug cartels, right, and majority of those coming from the U.S. And there were about 36,000 murders in Mexico last year, right? So courage or cringe? Innovative Mexican lawsuit to get to the root cause of gun violence in the country, or Mexico shifting the blame to the U.S. for their own failures in handling drug trafficking violence? Charlie.
Let's be clear about a couple of things. Number one is we kill far more people exporting McDonald's and social media platforms than we do with
guns. That may be the next lawsuit. So maybe this is the starting point.
Is what I mean. This is precedential.
Yeah. By the way, globally, not just in Mexico, we think about McDonald's.
And I'm picking them. It could be whatever. Burger King, all of these things, right?
Sure. But all those U.S.-based, you know,
we export obesity and diabetes.
Yeah.
But, look, and I'm also very pragmatic about guns. Mm-hmm. I don't own guns now, but I have in my past. Mm-hmm. And, you know, guns are – they're basically for three things, right? They're sportsmen – they're for, like, marksmanship and sports. They're for collecting, and they're for killing animals, people included. Right? Either you're hunting or you're using it for self-defense. And the intent when you use it for self-defense is to stop somebody in their tracks, i.e. kill them. Now, I do also think that guns can be a very powerful deterrent, but that's their principal function is to marksmanship, collecting, or killing. I put it in those three categories, mm-hmm. right? So I'm very well aware of that. I'm not going to make an argument that somehow, you know, that's not what their purpose is. It is. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I really think that the idea – I think ultimately I come down on cringe on this one. I think the cartels should be abolished. I don't think that, you know, suing Remington or Desert Eagle or Colt or any of these things is going to cause that to happen. Mm-hmm. I think gun companies definitely have and perhaps should have more, you know, regulations and programs and things to ensure that people are – that guns are not falling into hands overseas in more ways than perhaps is possible. But the ability that, you know, to defend ourselves, and I know this isn't a one-to-one in terms of this is not a Second Amendment thing. I realize that. It's not. But if you sue these companies for $10 billion, you know, the argument could be you have less of them, there's less guns, therefore whatever. Well,
their argument, by the way, that by the Mexican government is like part of it, the problem, they see it as your gun laws in your country are so loose that it's very easy for these guns to be in the street.
To get out.
That all end up coming to our country.
Yeah, and a lot of that is also varies by state, which is probably true because you have to look at the states that are on the border, right, specifically, not yet.
But it's like throughout Mexico, man. Like I know a lot of people like where my dad's hometown and basically anyone that owns a gun, they're all were brought, are 100% from the U.S. Mm-hmm. This is like, this 70% number is super low in my mind. It's probably 100% from the U.S. Maybe some, like South America, other places. I don't know.
But 100, but I think the article was talking about illegally, though. You're saying 100%
all of those
illegal.
Are illegal. Got yeah, it. Yeah, all of those are illegal. I mean, almost all ownership of, there's actually one, I think I was hearing today, there's actually only one gun store in the entire country of Mexico. I think it's one.
Interesting.
So it's like,
yeah,
almost 100. At least in those cases, people that have personal guns.
7 out of 10 is still a pretty big number.
Yeah.
So, look, I mean, I think that, again, I think this is something that requires more study, observation, policy, regulations, perhaps, and maybe this lawsuit helps bring that about. But I think the idea of Colt and Remington paying Mexico $10 billion, we're still going to have the same number of guns in there a year later. I really do believe that. So I don't know how this solves that particular problem.
Yeah,
besides probably. Weakening the companies and therefore maybe there's less guns.
Let me ask you a question. Do you feel that the gun manufacturer in the U.S. holds any blame for the level of gun violence that is in Mexico?
Yeah, but to an extent, like, I mean, I think you have to de-average it. Because sure. I don't think you can say across the board, like say if I'm one out of, I don't know how many gun manufacturers there are, that I have an equal responsibility whatever it may be.
If you look at it by individual manufacturers, probably
sure.
Some.
Sure, like this, like Colt for making an Emiliano Zapata one and maybe just advertising that, I don't, you know, it right. sounds very provocative. Like I don't know who would want to buy that.
I bet if you search, it's probably more like really drug-related ones.
Yeah,
I'm sure you'll find them.
I'm sure there are some. I think that those guys maybe have an outsized one. That's the part about this lawsuit that's actually very interesting is not the fact that they're saying that they're responsible, but the fact that they're saying that they're enabling it.
Right.
That part is interesting. And so
that's
so,
what they're saying. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So,
they contribute
and facilitating it.
Yeah.
It right. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. Facilitating it. So I'll put it to you this way.
Uh-huh.
The extent to which the lawsuit can prove that these manufacturers facilitated these things, 100%. Take them to the cleaners.
Right.
Take them to the cleaner. Right. If the jury determines, hey, this Emiliano Zapata thing was made strictly for, you know, some like narco branding somewhere, and like,
it's a
take
hard
them to
one
the cleaners.
It's a really hard one to argue, frankly, because look, for the
well,
same
look, we have Billy the Kid, you have all these other, you know,
not
Wild
just that,
West
it's
feature
like, sure
figures.
A lot of people that will want to, you know, collect that here. You know, like not, that people would just like to have that kind of association. You know, it's like, for example, if you found that in one of these protests here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
by folks like Proud Boys and they have guns that have the blue flag engraved in it, you know, could you say, well, wait a minute, you're adding some symbolism to some of these guns that are specifically meant to be anti-government. See, that's a tough stretch to make. You know, within the U.S., without saying, well, wait a minute, you're a private company, people should have the right to be able to get whatever kind of gun they want. So all of that.
So it's a long way for me to answer your question. Yes, but I would qualify to the degree that they're responsible for facilitating it explicitly, not just because they create something that gets stolen and used somewhere for a bad reason. That's what I could tell you right now.
Yeah.
So I'm cringe.
Oh, you're cringe.
Yep.
I'm a little bit split on this one, to be honest. Probably, look, I would say I'm courage only because I think it's a bold move by the Mexican government. And I think if it sparks, I'm a little bit like, I think in the position that you tend to take sometimes with some of these things, like if this actually sparks a different kind of conversation,
right.
I think it's actually pretty interesting. I think the likelihood of them winning is extremely low. Like they're just not. Like there is no way that, in my mind, the gun manufacturer with all the lobbying that they've done, across the border, that they're going to allow this because I think it opens up a really big door for a lot of things, even within the country, right? For that to happen. But what I do find their argument really interesting is that when we talk about the drug problem here in the U.S., how many times are we talking about in the context of Latin American countries, of Mexico, of Colombia, of everyone else, right?
Like rarely.
Those Well, I think all the time. It's like that's where it comes from, right? Like the drug trafficking in the U.S.
Oh, I thought you mean like the gun stuff.
No, not the gun. Yeah, the opposite.
Just the actual drug. Yeah, of course. All the drug. It's coming from there.
All the time. It's coming from there. And what are we going to do in cases where the U.S. wants to get involved there to stop drug trafficking, right? But the reality is without the demand, which is here, is what drives all that supply, right?
Yeah, but somebody could flip that argument on you.
And these guys are basically making the same argument with guns. Like, yeah, we have all the demand from these drug traffickers, but the supply all comes from the U.S. It's like we're having the inverse kind of conversation. And
yeah,
that I find really, really interesting.
I would have been a courage on this if it was Mexico sues U.S. gun manufacturers for facilitating arms trafficking deaths. I would have been encouraged because I think that is an innovative – I'm like, wow, I didn't think about that. These people are actually marketing. They know it exists. They want it anyway. Like we talked about with P&G with their shadow markets. Like this is a shadow market. We want it.
Shadow market.
We know it. We're not really going to tell anybody about it. Like right. Then I'd be encouraged on them.
Yeah. But anyways, that's the reason why I guess at the end of the day, maybe I'm more courage than cringe for that reason. I think it's innovative what they're doing. I like how it actually looks at a very complex issue and gives you a new angle that really doesn't get talked about very much.
Okay.
And it puts some onus back on some of these, you know, on both laws and companies that are contributing to the problem that many times, like, don't even get talked about at all. So for that reason, I'm encouraged.
Okay, we're starting off unillustriously, Jesus.
All right.
What comes next?
This is a good one. Courage or cringe, remove male and female from birth certificates, ? Here's why the country's largest group of physicians recommends it.
Kind of headline I can't imagine 100 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this probably would have been hard to imagine, you know.
10 years ago.
Yeah, or less, right? So in a June report, the American Medical Association's LGBTQ Advisory Committee advised the organization to push for removing sex labels from the public part of the birth certificate. The AMA, or the American Medical Association, is the country's largest association of physicians.
What is a public part of the birth certificate? What does that even mean?
That I don't know. I don't know. Isn't it all... I guess think, it either is or it isn't, right?
Like, right. I mean, you have to volunteer it, but I mean, somebody asks you for your birth certificate for 1,000 things. Like, you show them the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. I don't understand why. Yeah. I think maybe the whole thing is public, or you can say the whole thing is private. Right.
Right. Exactly. It's not like there's a little section you peel off a sticker and you're like, this is the part that's just for me.
I don't know if there's, it could be where like there's information that automatically gets published, like in.
It could be. It could be like in a register or something.
Maybe that's, but it all comes from the same birth certificate, right? So according to the report, it said that regarding its recommendation, right, they said assigning either a male or female sex at birth fails to recognize the medical spectrum of gender identity. They also said the participation by the medical profession and the government in assigning sex is often used as evidence supporting this binary view of gender. And not only does it stifle a person's ability to express and identify themselves, it can lead to marginalization and minoritization, which is, I hadn't heard that one before.
Mm.
Now, the recommendation initially didn't get actually much coverage until an article by WebMD went viral, in part because conservative publications and pundits jumped on the issue, right? So former United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley tweeted as basically, in quotes, "the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard." Representative Mary Miller, from a Republican from Illinois, responded tweeting, "Is this the science we're supposed to be trusting? ? By the way, the whole thing Twitter, you know who has the best take on Twitter is Dave Chappelle. It was like, he quotes Twitter, people writing messages on the bathroom wall.
It totally is.
It totally is that. Totally. It's like you're talking to yourself and like throwing this big thing, hoping people react to it, and someone looking at it again like a chuckle, and then moving on.
And then you're running away and not wiping the toilet seat.
Exactly. So that's very good way to think about it. Now, birth certificates are not public documents, but they do actually play an important role in affirming a person's identity, allowing them to work, travel, or start a family, right? They are required to get passports, driver license, and register for school, adoption, employment, or marriage, right? Now, according to a study released in June by the William Institute of the UCLA School of Law, about 1.2 million non-binary LGBTQ adults live in the U.S. I would think it would be a much bigger number than that. I was actually surprised with that number. 1.2 million? I thought it was way more than that.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
Most states now allow for people to amend the sex designation on their birth certificate to reflect their gender identity, but the process can vary greatly from state to state. And there's even 15 states now that allow people to use a gender-neutral X when a baby is born. Right, so the argument for in this case is that
it's like Latinx.
Exactly, we're going to talk about that one next. Is that it acknowledges the diversity that exists on the gender spectrum.
Yeah,
right? And number two, removes a major barrier for gender nonconforming people when they try to participate in society. So courage or cringe, political agenda and wokeness driving medical policy, or updated medical guidance reflecting the full spectrum of gender identity.
Wow.
You like that one?
Huh? I do. Very good. Whoever's writing these is getting better at it. Well, whoever that can be. You want me to go?
Sure.
All right. Well, Jesus, this is going to potentially shock you.
This is going to be shocking. Uh-huh.
I'm a cringe.
Okay.
A hard cringe, full stop. Look, sex is male or female. That is, it's biological, it's immutable. There's a great beauty around that, a great beauty around those differences and how they're complementary to one another. That's just the reality of our observable and natural order, right? Now, even if you concede that gender is separate from sex, which I don't, but even if you do, this argument does not make any sense and it holds no water. It literally says that assigning either male or female sex at birth fails to recognize the medical spectrum of gender identity. So every time I've heard the idea of somebody making a case for gender identity, they distinguish gender identity from biological sex. They say, well, I know there's biological sex that's male and female, but we can pick a gender on this broad spectrum.
Right.
If it's true that there, even among people who are advocates of this argument, that there is a male or female sex at birth, isn't that what we're talking about?
Yeah, it would be.
So how does it hold water then that assigning either male or female sex at birth fails to recognize the medical spectrum of gender identity? Again, I don't even believe that argument, but it doesn't. I can still believe biologically I'm male, and yet I'm female gender. Like, that is the argument. Again, I don't – that's not my argument, but I'm saying it doesn't follow from
this. I guess your argument
this.
Would be – okay, if I'm following what you're saying, your argument would be like, look, if you're telling me that instead of calling it gender, you would say biological sex. Just hear me out, right? Mm-hmm. So you replace – no longer in a certificate, you no longer say gender. You say biological sex. Then that one – male and female, that's basically what we're talking about here. Because that's basically what we're having. I mean, at the end of the day, what they're saying here is that by removing it all together, you're sort of negating the second part of this, which is how people identify themselves, or could potentially identify themselves, that may be the same and or different than their sex at birth.
Sort of. What I'm saying is that I believe that people are male or female. I believe that's a biological fact. I believe that for those who believe that gender is on a scale and it can be self-identified or self-given, even if you have that view, it makes no sense what these doctors are saying to remove male and female. Because the argument says, I know there's male and female biologically. Nevertheless, I may have a different gender that it's not compatible with my biological sex. Okay, I concede that. I'm saying for the sake of the argument. I concede that. So why would you necessarily need to remove male or female from the birth certificate?
Right, from gender. I guess I said it wrong. So maybe what if they said they told you instead of their recommendation, instead of removing male or female from gender, is saying, no, instead what we're going to do is we're going to just basically say biological sex. We're going to replace gender with biological sex.
Yes. Yeah. And I do
believe.
And
then leave that as male, female when they're born. And then obviously it would be different than whatever gender they end up being.
Right. I mean, I think I understand what you're asking me. You're saying if they forgot about gender and said.
If the recommendation was instead of changing, instead of putting no basically gender.
Removing male or female.
Right. Removing male or female. Right. Instead, we're actually going to replace the word gender from the birth certificate. And we're going to put biological sex there instead.
But that's what it says now, though. But birth certificates do say that. They say sex, not gender. I thought
it was said gender, yeah.
They say sex. And then so the idea is you're either male or female. What's being requested by these folks is to remove sex.
Right.
Remove male or female because, quote, it fails to recognize the spectrum of gender identity.
Right.
That does not compute. That's not compute. Those are that is not a equation that equals in a number. So it just does not work. Either biological sex exists or it doesn't. And for most people who believe in this idea of gender identity being picked, they do believe that there's a biological sex. I've heard the arguments many times. Like, I do believe there's biological sex. Nevertheless, I think that gender is a construct, and over time I can pick it or more of a social thing. Mm-hmm. So. Even in that case, this doesn't make sense. So for me, I'm a cringe across the board.
Yeah, I didn't realize. I thought I was under – when reading this, I was under the impression that it said gender, not sex.
I'm struggling to understand what difference that would make, though, what they called it. They're basically saying male and female goes away because of the gender spectrum. And my point is male and female ties to sex. Even for it. People who believe that.
My only point there was simply if it will make a – I was trying to just understand if it will make a difference for you if what they were assigning to it was not a gender – labeled to a gender, but just basically labeled to sex. Okay,
no,
that's all I was trying. That's all I was trying to. Maybe okay. I confused the issue.
Sorry,
maybe bring it up.
I'm easy to confuse. You know?
It's okay. Yeah, for me, I think I'm cringe as well. Now I'm cringe because I think we're like solving for the wrong issue here. I think a part of what we're talking about here is the recognition of, as is mentioned, the spectrum of gender identity. I'm one of those that falls more in the camp of saying, look, do I think there could be a spectrum? Yeah, sure. I actually don't have any issue with that whatsoever. I also think that recognizing that spectrum, frankly, happens more over time. Because I think when you're, as a child that is born, there's just no scenario where that child even at that point even recognizes one way or the other what they may be, what gender they may be, if it happens to be different than whatever the sex they're born. So I think even if there is a broader spectrum of gender, I don't see how this necessarily solves that problem. Now, maybe the reality, the issue that they're talking about, which is interesting, is that as people are adults or as they're growing up, they have or recognize that their gender is different than their biological sex and want to have their birth certificate reflect that, maybe the solve is just make that easier for people to change it if that's what they want to change. Right, like if that's what we really are solving for or looking to solve for, maybe just make it easier. But to pretend like there is no actual, you know, biological sex of male or female, I think it's just odd. There was like a whole other piece I didn't even bring up here that the piece was talking about, which actually related to when kids are born, where they actually have basically parts of both sexes. Right, yeah. And there's like a whole other sort of issue that is there they have to sort of try to solve for there.
Yeah, those are hermaphrodites, and it's extraordinarily rare. And even in those cases, there is a predominance to one sex.
Right. Well, and that's what they were talking about. Like, there's this issue where they're trying to force the child to have to be one or the other. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I don't know enough as to why that would be the case or what happens if you don't, et cetera. But the bottom line is that I think putting that even at this place where you're saying there is no – I mean, I almost feel like you're trying to negate that this even concept exists, whether it's like a male or a female. And that doesn't really – like I don't think you acknowledge the spectrum by taking away positions on it. Wouldn't it be more by adding to it? And you couldn't really do that at that age anyway. So to me, that's once again is why I think it's the wrong solve. I just think if part of it is making it easier for people that do see themselves in a different gender, then make it easier for them to change their birth certificate. And I have no issue with that.
Cool.
So, cringe.
All right.
Our last
one. Not going to disagree.
Oldie, but not oldie, but goodie. But it's one that we've talked about before. LA Times columnist called out for using Latinx term to describe Hispanic population. So, yeah, this is kind of – we've talked about this in this show before, but this is a funny one. So Gene Guerrero, who is a columnist for the LA Times, got some major Twitter backlash after referring to the Latino community as Latinxes, add an S at the end of the X.
Yeah.
Now, this all started with a tweet where she was commenting on the efforts by the Democratic Party to engage Latinos in regards to the recall election of Gavin Newsom, right? So in the tweet, she said – Democratic outreach to Latino voters on the California recall election is not working. I've been speaking to young Latinxes, and almost none of them have any idea what is going on. This is really, really bad, right? So immediately there was a
Did she do apostrophe S, by the way?
No.
Just drop XS.
XS. Well, that makes sense, though, right? It's plural.
We'll get to that.
All right. Well, yeah. Anyways. So their response was quick and brutal, right? So Ron DeSantis, press secretary, Christina Pusha, which, by the way, I don't think I'll ever give Ron DeSantis any credit for almost anything, but this one, this comment right here, I particularly enjoyed, where she said, keep calling them Latinxes. I'm sure that will help your outreach effort. Florida Democrats should adopt this term immediately in all communications.
That's a new brand.
Then there was Brad Palumbo, writer for the Washington Post, who said, why liberals incorrectly calling Latino people Latinx to be woke is actual cultural appropriation. I guess it actually does exist. Now, by the way, here, Brad Palumbo, you should actually know that she's actually Latina, not a white liberal.
Right.
So she actually wrote a book about like her upbringing in border towns, about her story and her dad. So this is actually, well, I think it's a funny comment as well. Just because she looks whitish, she's actually Latina. And then there was Frank Luntz. Luntz is a conservative consultant, pollster, and strategist.
Yep.
Which, by the way, I was actually interested in looking at his Wikipedia that in January of this year, Lutz declared himself no longer Republican. So I wanted to almost dig into that. So interesting. Why that's the
what
case.
Is he?
Yeah, what is he now? I don't know.
Just Party X?
Party X, that's right. So he said, if a political group uses the term Latinx, it's telltale sign that they're not in touch with Hispanic Americans. And what he did is he actually linked to a Pew Research study, which we talked about in the show, mm-hmm. where it talked about the percentage of Latino adults and how they basically view the term Latinx, where 76% of Latino adults here in the U.S. have never heard of the term, 76%. 20% have heard of the term but don't use it. And it was only 3% of all Latinos who actually use that term, Latinx, right? So it's a massive disconnect.
It's the biggest reason why I don't like the term is because it's meant to identify a number of people that names them something they don't use themselves.
Right.
It is purely a marker, and it has been. And frankly, I go further to say that for the most part, it's a marker, not 100%, so don't jump out of your chair, but almost predominates a particular ideology. In other words, like if you're using Latinx, you're probably left of center, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. And it's a marker to say, I know what I'm talking about, A, and B, I have this particular kind of outlook. That's usually what it communicates
to me. I mean, to me, I see it much more, not so much as a ideology, much more I put it in the marketing sector.
It's certainly marketing too.
In the marketing sector, like when people, you know, how many times do we use the term? I mean, look, let's call ourselves out. We've been in plenty of conversations where we use the word Latinx.
Absolutely.
And I cringe. I really have made it a point to not use it.
I don't use it either anymore. I stopped.
And like part of it is like
3 months ago.
Look, even when we were at Me Too, that was a big term that was being used there. I remember the first time I heard it, I'm like, what the hell is that?
No. Back up. We helped bring that term. It wasn't we were using it. We brought that term out of obscurity.
So
that term was an academic term for like a dozen years.
I had never heard of it. So exactly. The first time I heard it, I'm like, what is that? And it was a really interesting term, but for a period of time, there's plenty of other digital media brands and brands in general that use the term Latinx. But it's like in spite of Latino sounding like, we do not want to be called that. And the reason why I've almost entirely stopped using it now is because, look, if we believe in data and people's rights to be able to say, you know, to tell you what they feel and how they want to be called, like, why the hell would I keep on calling them something that they don't want to be called? Like, that's ridiculous, right? So it is this great indicator of people that are trying to be woke, trying to be in the end, feel like they're more connected, but it has the exact opposite effect.
I had the same problem, by the way, when we did our show about the Cleveland Indians dropping the name Indians. Mm-hmm. Now, they've picked since then Guardians, I think is what their new name is, right? Cleveland Guardians, if I'm not mistaken, yeah. Which a lot of people like, and great. I'm glad sure. They all like the name. But the issue that I had then was that if in the data seemed to indicate the Native Americans prefer Indian to Native American.
Yeah, I remember you talking, but it was a very specific group you were talking about. I don't believe that's across the board.
I could be wrong, but I remember having that conversation. Yeah. My point is here, the numbers are stark.
Oh, okay. Yeah. This is
stark.
Like not
this is
debatable.
Like 97% of people either don't know what the hell you're talking about or don't prefer it. And yet we're still using it because it's like it's a marker.
What's
it's
interesting
an identifier.
About this is that you could talk about research and be like, oh, but maybe the way they did this poll question, whatever, right? But we've seen it real time. Whenever content is put on social media, Facebook, any of these, and you use the term Latinx, there's always going to be people that immediately respond to it negatively,
right.
Latinos that respond to it very negatively.
Now, let me add to the reason, this is a cringe for me. Uh-huh. I mean, I'm sorry, it's a courage for me because of it's the backlash, right?
It's the pushback she got. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm courage on this. The part that's insult to injury
right.
is that the idea of the X was supposed to be both, you know, Latino or Latina to cover for that.
Right.
But it also makes, there's no need for being, to pluralize it because it already is a plural.
Right.
Right, since you're talking about either or, by virtue of that, you could be talking about either or, right? So the idea of putting the S after the X not only is a total tongue twister nightmare word, it's grammatically incorrect. And so insult to injury, if we can retire this as quickly as possible. And again, raising our hand, knowing what we've contributed to this term being a real thing.
The funny thing here is that she doubled down, right? So after getting pushed back, Jean jumps back in there. Like, Jean, back away. She's like, I've never faced such a tidal wave of right-wing hysteria as for using the word Latinx this afternoon. And then she had a little laughing emoji. Which then, of course, led to a whole new slew of other people that were like, wait.
I'm not right-wing.
I'm actually Latino. And this term is terrible. Right? But it really shows a massive disconnect. I mean, it's like you're not looking at the data. You're not respecting people's right to basically determine like what they want to be called. and like forcing this issue. So yeah, I'm cringe as well.
Very good.
I don't mean to like talk more about it. It's cringe across the board.
I think we agree with the 97% of the population. So go. Now we got to just work hard to abolish the terminology. Okay, we've got our big show coming up next week. Right? Big.
Our 1 year anniversary.
Our 1 year anniversary.
With Mr. Marcos Klein.
What are some things that we're going to be doing on that show? There'll be festivities, fireworks.
Yeah.
Poker, cigars, drinking.
We'll try to record something along the ways. We'll see.
I will point out also, we'll add the link in the show notes that we are doing a survey. So if you're listening to the show, we'd love your thoughts on the show. So we're going to include a survey link to the show notes of this particular episode. It takes like 45 seconds to do this survey. Tell us a little bit about what you like, what you don't like. Am I talking too much? Does Jesus talk too much? Is it too short, too long, not enough or too much of whatever particular thing? We really want to know. We want to actually take this year opportunity to get feedback from everybody. So please, 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 if you heard the show today, just take a second, go open up the show notes, click on the link, take the survey. We actually did it in a really cool interactive format, so it's an easy and fun survey to take. It's not just like one of these boring, you know, pick a number kind of things. It's actually interactive, so you'll have a lot of fun doing it. So please do that. If you like the show, please share it with your friends, share it on social media. Like I said, fun show coming up next week. Anything else, Jesus?
No.
I think we're good.
I think we're good.
So we'll see you guys all on our 1 year anniversary coming up next week on another episode of TDR. If you enjoyed this episode of the Diversity Remix, please remember, first of all, to subscribe and help us to spread the word. Tell your friends, family, coworkers, and give us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else you get your listening fix. And lastly, please remember to stop by blackbrown.us, the creator of this podcast, and take a look at our work and our approach at the intersection of diversity and business. The Diversity Remix is produced by Leo Gomez, with production services by Jose Manuel Durquidi and Luis Diego Carranza, and our friends at Juan Diego Network. The Diversity Remix is a production of Black Brown.